Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're going to introduce you to the next generation of support to help keep your kids safe and protect them from substance abuse as we chat with Ginger Katz and learn about her latest Courage to Speak online system for parents, educators, and communities. And we'll remind you how to be part of Ginger's next Empowering Youth to Be Drug-Free Family Night. Then we're going to visit the Connecticut Institute for Communities to learn how this unique agency is combining community and economic development with educational and public health initiatives in Western Connecticut, and why CIFC could be a successful model in other communities in the state and beyond. And we'll close meeting a physician who launched a nonprofit that's presenting a series of programs in the greater Bridgeport region to help prevent diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and high blood pressure. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Hey, if you're willing to take a stand against domestic violence, why don't you walk a mile in the shoes of a victim? On April 25th at 8 a.m., join more than 1,500 expected supporters for the 8th Annual Center for Family Justice Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event. For over 120 years, this agency has worked providing free, confidential, bilingual crisis services that help all people impacted by domestic violence, sexual violence, and child abuse restore their lives. The walk starts at the Fairfield train station and ends at Old Town Hall with a brief award ceremony. If you'd like to learn more about the center and to register for the walk, visit centerforfamilyjustice.org. A familiar voice here on the award-winning For the People is joining us now. I'm so pleased to have back on the line Ginger Katz. She is the founder of the nonprofit Courage to Speak Foundation, which is saving lives by empowering youth to be drug-free by education and open communication about the dangers of drug use. The organization promotes this in many different ways and also rewards it in a very special way that you can experience as a listener to the award-winning For the People by attending a great event that's coming up in just a couple of months here. We talking about, just a few weeks, the 16th Annual Courage to Speak's Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night. That's coming up on Wednesday, March 25th in Norwalk. We're going to be talking about that, but in the meantime, let's check in with Ginger. Good morning, Ginger. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, John. How are you?
Good, good. So it is probably way more painful for you to talk about why the Courage to Speak Foundation exists, but knowing you as I have for so many years, it does pain me to ask you to keep bringing it up, but it is an important point because I think so many parents and loved ones, whether they suspect a child is dabbling in or is full-blown addicted to some type of substance, they can still really somehow put themselves into a state of denial that in the end could be a tragic decision. So if you wouldn't mind, please just quickly reviewing the history of
sure,
your family.
John.
Yeah.
Sure, thank you. My son passed away when he was 20 years old. He called up crying, begging for help, addicted to a drug, and he couldn't stop. He was a college student. We brought him home, and within 3 months, he had passed away from a drug overdose. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a second chance. I knew I was going to do something about it, but I didn't realize it in the very beginning because doctors asked us to tell people my son died of an aneurysm or a heart attack. And that was a lie. That wasn't the truth. And in the middle of the night, just before the funeral the next morning, I had a vision and I visualized speaking out. And I said to my husband, I said, I never lied about my son. He was a good kid. Ian was a good kid. He made an unhealthy decision to use drugs, and I was not ashamed of him, and I wanted to speak out. And my husband said, immediately, we'll do it. So the next day, we went to the funeral, buried our beloved son, and started to speak out.
And here you and, you are over a million people later, thousand plus presentations all over the world, really. Your influence is left the state of Connecticut, left the United States, and now you're making important inroads elsewhere as well.
Well, I think so. And I named the organization The Courage to Speak because of the silence that surrounds drugs. And that's what I found. There was such a stigma. And as soon as I started opening up, I found other people opening up. And this was 23 years ago. And I said, if we didn't speak out about it, others will die. And I didn't want to see this happen to another family. My son used tobacco, sipped beer, and did some pot in high school. And I believe he was addicted to marijuana by the time he was a senior year. All the things that I know that I didn't know the signs. And that's why we have a curriculum for parents to keep their children safe. I didn't know the signs to look for. I had no idea how involved he was in drugs. He went off to college, and in his junior year, he cried and begged for help. We brought him home, and then he passed away 3 months later.
Yeah. So if folks want to learn more or kind of follow along as we chat for the next 8 or 10 minutes, they can go to CourageToSpeak.org, which is the website where they can find out about a couple of the things that we're talking about now and learning some of the important things that they need to know. So I guess in terms of breaking news with the Courage to Speak Foundation, really one of the most exciting things that's happening is just a few weeks old, and that is the launch of a new free online program for people. Tell us about that.
Okay. The number one key to prevention is a parent talking to the child about the dangers of drugs. And we go into the schools, and we have a program called Courageous Parenting 101, Parenting Through the Opiate Crisis and Beyond. And parents come, we have 30, 40, 50 people in the audience, and they listen to my story. But I wanted to reach a wider audience. So we decided to put the program online, free to parents. It's called Courage to Speak Online Module, Parenting Through the Protecting You Through the Opiate Crisis and Beyond. And it's right on the beginning first page in the right-hand corner is the link. Mm-hmm. And you'll get tools to keep your children safe. It's a video. It's about a 30-minute video. And we're reaching parents where they are. And that way, you know, they don't have to come to a presentation at night if they can't. And if they miss it, they can always, waiting for their child finishing a soccer game or whatever, they could take 15 minutes out of the time. They could do it in increments. But it's everything for parents to keep their children safe. Yes, we discuss the opiate epidemic. We do this, but the tips for parents are invaluable. You know, parenting doesn't come with a curriculum, but we have the curriculum.
Yeah, it's funny because this is the second week in a row that we've had somebody on talking about a breakthrough type of program that involves something that is very personal and private to people, the other case being mental illness. But this move toward creating a online resource that people can, you know, bring into the bathroom or into their cars, like you said, while they're sitting on the sidelines at the soccer game or while they're taking a break from work or whatever, and they can access it. Can you explain just for a minute or two a little bit about how you were able to translate the dynamic that you bring to the live parenting sessions, the parent education sessions, onto something that is effective on the mobile or computer device?
Okay. Well, first of all, I have a facilitator. It's called the Live Courageous Parenting 101. It has two people, my son's story, then the facilitator with the slide presentation. Mm-hmm. So I speak through the video, and the facilitator speaks through the video, and they're very descriptive. And it touches the heart, but it also touches the educational component of what parents need and get the tools to keep their children safe. We have listening, active listening handout, teaching refusal skills to kids through the parents' words, knowing the signs to look for. We have all the interactive skills exercises for parents to keep their children safe before the video. I think it's a very good conglomeration of the live session because not everybody shows up, and you want to reach a wider audience because we're in the throes of an epidemic.
Mm-hmm. And you are
in the throes of an epidemic.
And this is by no means a substitute or replacement for the live activities. You're still going to be available to into communities.
Oh, yes. We speak, and that's not ever going to stop. That's my favorite thing as part of the organization, to reach one person at a time. But we realized, being realistic, not everybody can come out because they have a second job or they have stresses in their life. Or, you know, they don't want to come out for some reason because they can't find a babysitter or whatever. This is a substitute. But either way, I think the parent will gain the knowledge to keep their children safe.
Yeah, they can never get too much information, whether it's in the dynamic atmosphere of one of your live visits or on this new tool, which people can once again access just by going to couragetospeak.org and clicking on the button on the upper right-hand corner. Or if they
That's
want
right.
to go directly to it, they can go to couragetospeak.org/courageous-parenting-education-module. One of the other things we absolutely want to remind folks about is a way that they can get to know the Courage to Speak Foundation by witnessing the good that you're doing through the eyes of the young people that you're influencing. And one of the great things about doing this show for so long, Ginger, and having a great friendship with you for so long, is that we have helped promote this Empowering Youth to Be Drug-Free Family Night each of the 16 years that you've been doing it, and we're so proud to be able to continue that. The event's coming up Wednesday, March 25th at the Nathan Hale Middle School in Norwalk. It is open to the public, and it starts with a dinner and goes into a really dynamic program. Tell us more about that event.
Sure. I'm based in Norwalk, and this program has been replicated in other towns and other states. And it's the results of my presentation or video. The children listen to my presentation, and then they get the curriculum we developed. We developed elementary, middle, and high school curriculum. The health class teaches this in the schools. Now, we kind of fell into the family night years ago, I'd say about 16 years or 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. One of the principals said, why don't you come over to the school and see all the artwork and the letters they wrote to you and your husband about Ian's loss. And I want you to see this, the results of what the curriculum provided, which was artwork and writing and so on, and expressing feelings, social, emotional learning through children really experiencing and making good decisions and so on and so forth. So they write their feelings about what they heard from the live presentation or the video. And so I looked at all the work, and it was so powerful. They were getting it. They were getting Ian's story. They were getting the lesson plans that were created from the curriculum. And the principal said, well, why don't we have an event and have children speak out? And that's exactly what we did. And then all of a sudden, not really an event, just have parents come out to see the work. Parents came out with video cameras. The newspapers came out. The clergy came out. The community came out. They were curious about this. And the kids took the microphone, and they discussed and made a vow not to use drugs. They didn't want to suffer what our family suffered. They didn't want to use drugs because of what happened to Ian. They didn't want to hurt their mother. I get more hugs from kids because they don't want to hurt their mother. Mm. So you touch them in the heart, and then they're open to receiving that information. And that's what our curriculum did. So all of a sudden, the other principals jumped on board and said, this is an event. Why don't we do this rotate it within the school system? So we did it first at West Rocks, and then we rotated to the other four schools. And this time, actually, we're going to have it at Nathan Hale Middle School, and that's the middle school my son attended.
Oh, nice.
And he sat in the same seats the audience are going to sit in.
Very
and on March 25th.
So we want people to go to couragetospeak.org to learn more about it and to plan to attend. You don't have to be in Norwalk. You can be anywhere.
People have come from other states to see it. It's an event that's been very popularized because it involves the homeschooling community, and it's a free dinner and networking. The mayor, the superintendent, chief of police come out and introduce the children, and I share a piece of Ian's story to the parents, because the children at this point have heard it, and they want, and the kids want their parents to hear Ian's story.
Well, after nearly 1,000 presentations to over 1 million young people and adults all over the country, Ginger Katz and the Courage to Speak Foundation continues to save lives by empowering youth to be drug-free through education and open communication about the dangers of drug use. Ginger, once again, we congratulate you and thank you for your time this morning, and we will be chatting with you again. Good luck with the new online program as well as your event that's coming into Norwalk that we hope a lot of people will come out and attend at the Nathan Hale Middle School on March 25th. That is the 16th annual Courage to Speak, Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night. Thanks so much for being on the show this morning. Right. We have gone west, young man, to the town of Danbury, the city of Danbury, actually, and are visiting with an old and dear friend to start. And we'll be meeting another old friend in just a little while. In a few minutes, we'll be parachuting in to talk to Nicole Taxiltaridis, who is the Connecticut Institute for Communities new director of early learning. But right now, we're going to talk with James Maloney. Jim is president and CEO of the Connecticut Institute for Communities Incorporated. This is the only organization in Western Connecticut that combines healthcare, education, human services, and housing support in a coordinated approach by providing direct services and engaging a host of community partners. But Jim, beyond that, thank you for inviting me to this beautiful renovated facility here in Danbury, I guess the former police station, something like that?
Well, we're on. Thank you, John. It's really nice to see you again and be with you. We're on the site of the former police station. This building is actually fully brand new. When the police department relocated to the northern end of Main Street, that freed up this lot. And we, in cooperation with Union Savings Bank, bought their facility, the former police station facility. Union Savings built a branch office right here at the corner of Main Street and Boughton Street. And we took ownership of the balance of the property and have built our health center and headquarters building, which is where we're located now, right across from St. Peter's Church. We are doing a couple other physical projects here on this lot or in this area, this direct neighborhood, and I'll be happy to tell you about them as we go. Yeah.
Well, it had to be, from your perspective and with the history you and I have going back now almost 30 years, it must have been incredible to be able to actually build to the programming and build to the needs that your agency is assisting communities in supporting.
Right. It has been a great opportunity and a lot of fun. When I left Congress in 2003, the question for my mind was, okay, what am I going to do for my next phase of life? And I had a couple of opportunities to do things like in Washington, but my roots and family are here in New England, and particularly in Connecticut, and my wife and I didn't want to leave. So I looked at some other opportunities and decided instead that, well, what I really want to do is an idea that I've had in my head for a number of years, which is to create a new kind of nonprofit organization. I say new, it has roots. Technically, the Connecticut Institute for Communities, CIFC, or CIVIC, we refer to it as short, is a community development corporation. And the idea of a community development corporation is that you research and identify the needs of the communities you serve, and then you attempt to mobilize resources, programs, services to meet those needs. So, for example, the very first project we took on, and I know this anticipates your next guest, the Danbury Head Start program was in quite, I'll call it shambles, back in 2003-04. And we saw the opportunity to, and the need to, rebuild that program. And we approached the federal government about that, and they agreed that this new organization, the Connecticut Institute for Communities, would have that opportunity. And we've built quite a dynamic early childhood comprehensive program, both here in the greater Danbury area and in the greater Norwalk area in the period since. So that's an example. But a side example to that is that our research disclosed that the city of Danbury was the only large city in the state of Connecticut that did not have an early Head Start program. Early Head Start is for kids 6 weeks up to 2 years, 12 months, and Head Start is 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds. So the early Head Start program is very important because early identification is one of the key things in child development. And we then went ahead and sought the resources to start an early childhood program, a infant and toddler, they call it. Similarly, the city of Danbury was the largest city in the state of Connecticut that did not have a community health center, which was pretty surprising, but nonetheless true. And when we identified that as an issue, we decided to solve the problem. And again, we worked with our federal delegation, we worked with our state officials, and we created the Greater Danbury Community Health Center. Greater Danbury Community Health Center provides comprehensive primary care to people of all ages. And it's on a sliding fee scale. It goes down to zero, particularly for children with of the lowest income, pay absolutely nothing. Adults pay a minimum of $30 per visit. But we do everything from adult medicine, pediatrics. We do dentistry. We do behavioral health. So it is a comprehensive program and service. We have a women's health department as well.
And it wasn't long after that was established that, boom, your APRN was honored with a APRN, or Nurse Practitioner Provider of the Year Award. So Karen White, I see, is one of the exciting things that could happen. It probably speaks to the level of expertise that the individuals who come to your healthcare spectrum of services are able to avail themselves to.
Yes. Speaking of Ms. White, we have five school-based health centers that are affiliated with our main Greater Danbury Community Health Center, one of which is in Newtown, but we have a facility at Henry Abbott Technical School here in Danbury. We also have a facility at Danbury High and at the two middle schools in Danbury. And we also have a mobile health van that goes to the elementary schools, particularly on dental screening and that sort of thing. And then if we identify problems through the mobile health van, we can make referrals to the services that are located here. For example, on a van, we wouldn't do a tooth extraction, as an example. But if we identified the need, that child would then be referred to come in to see one of the dentists here in this building at our dental service.
Yeah. And we probably end up talking about this a little bit later with Nicole, but it seems like the early intervention that can happen on the front lines in the mobile van can really turn a cavity filling, very quickly before it turns into like an abscess or an extraction. So it's all about both minimizing obviously the discomfort and trauma to the young patient, but at the same time, catching stuff early, it sounds like, is a kind of a mantra here.
Right. Well, not only early, but also what we refer to as integration. So, for example, a dentist seeing a child may identify some other issue, might identify a nutrition issue. A child doesn't look like he or she is getting the proper nutrition. well, that triggers a referral, either internally or externally. There's an opportunity to talk to mom or dad about early education. That triggers a connection with Head Start. And that it works the other way around, of course, too. Head Start will do an evaluation of a child and say, oh, this child needs dental services, or this child needs behavioral health services, or this child needs medical attention, or needs to get the vaccinations up to date, all that sort of stuff. So everything, the goal here is to integrate that. So when we say we do health, education, housing, and economic development, we try to do it in an integrated way, because we know that, you know, in the old song, the knee bone's connected to the shin bone, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So everything is connected.
Right,
and what we try to do is make sure those connections are available.
Yeah.
When we talk about economic development, the work that we're doing there has largely to do with facilities. So this building, for example, which is almost a $20 million project, does great things for Danbury. It brings people. We have doctors and APRNs, advanced practice registered nurses. We have dentists. We have financial people. We have planning people. We have clerical people. We have medical assistants. We have about 80 people who now work in downtown Danbury that didn't work in downtown Danbury before this facility was here.
And
that has a profound effect on the local community.
Yeah.
We're building. We have several other projects. We just finished a project. We took over the old YMCA when the YMCA moved to Brookfield, basically.
Mm-hmm.
We took over the old building, and we've converted that into a community center. And we have reopened the only public access pool in the city of Danbury. There are no pools in any of the Danbury schools. So where do kids go to learn how to swim, which is literally a life-saving skill? So we reopened the pool. We reopened the gymnasium. We recommissioned the stage so we can do community theatrical or other kinds of presentations.
Yeah.
We also have some meeting facilities and that sort of thing. That's at the community center. One of the other projects we took on fairly early on was that the only low and moderate income housing private cooperative in Western Connecticut is known as the Beaver Street Apartments Cooperative. And back in, about 2005, they approached me because they were going bankrupt. And in fact, HUD was going to foreclose them. So we intervened with HUD and got a little time. We then worked with them and rehabilitated both their finances and their whole physical development. So the facility now looks great. It's fully occupied. And we really have sort of turned that around. And done good things there. We're building in our backyard an 80-unit elderly housing building, and we are also actually expanding this year. We're expanding this building to make room for even more services, not new services, but the demand for our services is so intense, we're building about a 25% addition.
Great. Well, we don't really have time to talk about it today, but we are going to come back and talk with either you or a designee of CIFC, as well as some folks from Ann's Place, because you've also created a very innovative supports cooperative for folks living with cancer.
Yes.
So promise to come back and talk about that. But
that's
in
great.
The meantime, we want to kind of focus in on the Head Start initiative
okay.
and talk to Nicole.
Yep.
So in the meantime, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. Jim Maloney, attorney, former U.S. Congressman and President and CEO of the Connecticut Institute for Communities. Jim, thanks for having us here, and we'll talk to you again soon.
John, it's my pleasure. Great to be with you.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations that would love to have your support. You can learn about a number of them through LoveCT, and if you run, work for, or volunteer for a qualified nonprofit, apply now for a chance to receive a $5,000 radio contract to promote your event or your brand. Just go to our radio station website, hit the Event Guide tab, and click on to LoveCT to apply for the grant and to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. It's me, John Voquette, your Public Affairs Director here at Connoisseur Media. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The Special Education Legal Fund, or SELF, was founded in 2018 by two moms who had navigated the special education system for their own children and found the process to be difficult and complicated. SELF was founded to provide families in need with access to knowledge and resources in order to successfully advocate for their children in special education. And its legal assistance program provides life-altering educational improvements and changes in the form of legal assistance to families experiencing financial need and hardship with children in special education. If you'd like to learn more about SELF, just visit spedlegalfund.org.
Well, as promised, we're going to switch gears away from Mr. Maloney and meet Nicole Taxiltaritis, as we're discovering before we turned on the mic, old friends who have recrossed paths after a couple of decades almost, and great to see her. So Nicole oversees CIFC's two Head Start Early Head Start programs, Head Start of Northern Fairfield County and Danbury and Greater Norwalk Head Start in Norwalk, as well as the CIFC's other early learning programs, like their School Readiness Initiative here in Danbury and the Child Daycare Program in Norwalk. This program serves more than 600 children each year, and the other piece of the exciting news is she's also overseeing the Connecticut Institute for Community's new Head Start Early Learning Center. So, Nicole, great to see you again.
Good to see you.
So you have compiled quite a resume of service under the Head Start banner. Reacquaint folks and remind them exactly what Head Start is and why it became your passion.
Sure. So Head Start, early Head Start, came out of an initiative out of the 60s under President Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty. And the whole premise of Head Start is really to support children and their families on their pathway toward, you know, education and living a higher quality life. And so I became passionate about this work. I got bitten by the Head Start bug, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago, and you know, it's just become a great passion of mine. Really having the opportunity to have such a an influence on families and children as they get off their first steps in their own lives. Head Start is a comprehensive service that provides not only just the education component of being kinder ready, but also is focused on families and getting them all the services that they need. Mm-hmm. So when we say comprehensive service, we're looking at health services. Mm-hmm. So our children receive annual dental exams, vision screening, hearing screenings, developmental screenings like ASQ, which is called the Ages and Stages Questionnaire, which again lets us know, are they on the proper trajectory for their physical and cognitive development? And in the event that in some cases maybe some children are not meeting those milestones, again, we have the resources through our referral process to either Birth to Three or other services that our program has partnerships with, that we're able to close those gaps for parents. And so certainly by the time they're transitioning to kindergarten, the family as well as the child has those services met so that they can be successful once they get to kindergarten.
The various experts and people who are in such close proximity to the child from such an early stage, it's a lot easier to notice or catch something that might be going sideways with
That's right.
Child so much faster than it might if the child was not under that Head Start
That's
initiative.
Right. That's right. So early intervention is key. So again, by the time they are transitioning, we know that all the services that that family and the child need in order for them to be successful in kindergarten and beyond are already put in place.
Great.
And you know, public school can tell you the benefits of receiving children that come out of the Head Start program. Yeah.
So Head Start is really kind of a brand under which early childhood education was a thing way before it was
yes,
a thing.
That's right. That's right. We are the gold standard. We're the national gold standard. We are focused on family development. Family is the center of the work because we solely believe that, or wholeheartedly believe that, when a family is put in a strong place, right, all of their resources are put in place where they can be strong and have set a strong foundation for their family, then inevitably the byproduct of that is a child who is ready for kindergarten.
Mm. So how awesome was it to come into this job about a little over a year ago and either know or almost immediately know you were going to be walking into a brand new Head Start Early Learning Center, kind of like becoming a pilot and then finding out you get to fly it to the moon, right?
Yes, very exciting, really exciting. It's a beautiful center, you know, just visually. So I welcome anyone who hasn't come to see the building. It's at 29 Park Avenue in Danbury. So you should come on by, certainly call in advance so we can, you know, schedule that. And yeah, so visually it's a beautiful building. Our playground is like state of the art, has all kinds of, you know, sensory components as well as offers the gross motor that we know children need. And yeah, so it's been a pleasure to welcome the families into this new environment. Of course, classroom teachers are very excited because, you know, there's nothing like something that's brand new.
Yeah. So tell me about your people. You've got some stars working for you, right?
Yes, we have amazing teachers. Our teachers are the heart of this work. You can't have an amazing early childhood program without amazing teachers. Our teachers are really dedicated. They come in every day with their hearts and their minds really focused on the development of children and children and infants, because as you know, we also have an infant toddler program in Danbury as well. So we do service children and families from birth through age 5.
So Danbury is really kind of known, at least in Western Connecticut, if not throughout the state or even the region, as being such an incredibly diverse community, dozens and dozens and dozens of different places where folks have come from, different cultures, different levels of education and work training and things, certainly different ways of bringing up children from birth. Can you explain to the folks that are listening how you are working to try to take the facility that you have and the people that you have and the accessories and programming that you have to best serve the entire rainbow of diversity in terms of the children who come through your door?
Can you reframe that question?
Sure. How do you best serve so many children from so many diverse backgrounds?
So the curriculum is really flexible. I mean, it is one that is has components of cultural competency along with it. So we certainly, through our library and our selection of books that go along with our curriculum, emphasize on the various cultures that are within our classroom. Now, although we have a cultural array, we do have knowledge of our languages that we have. So if we think linguistically, the majority of our population here in Danbury that are part of our program, speak Spanish and Portuguese. So that really does help target some of the work that we do around culture and diversity. And so we see that in our books. We also invite our parents to come into our classrooms and engage in, you know, whether that be them reading books in their, you know, home language to reading books in English as well. We do have a diversity day, so that day we do celebrate all of the cultures, not only that are within our program, but represented, you know, in our world. And so children have that that firsthand experience with learning about the world through our teachers, through the books, through our curriculum.
So Head Start is, you know, a couple of generations old now, but it's always innovating. There is always keeping up with current standards. What's something that is either brand new to the Head Start world or on the horizon and coming that you're hearing about that really excites you for your future?
Well, just dovetailing on our conversation around diversity, there's actually a new tool, and we're really excited about using this tool. It's called the Dual Language Learner Assessment. So nationally, Head Start has certainly realized, I think in more regions than others, but it's certainly now becoming more prevalent just nationwide, which is, you know, how do we best support children that are coming into our program that their home language may not be English? And so how do we support them in maintaining value of their home language at the same time learning English, right? So that they can ultimately, again, be successful in the public school system when they transition to kindergarten. And so Head Start nationally has come up with, it's called the Dual Language Learner Assessment, and it's for programs to be able to assess their classrooms, assess their centers, center-wide, to see what initiatives are you putting in place, what interventions, what elements of your environment do you have that support dual language learners. And then it at the very end will give us a strategic plan to say, here are the areas that you're actually doing well, like in one of those interventions that we have in place in every classroom is when we label, you know, anything that is labeled in the classroom is labeled in English, and any other language that is spoken in that classroom. So that would be an example of an intervention for dual language learners, and then it gets scaffolded from there. So.
Well, so exciting to hear about that development, as well as to reconnect with an old acquaintance who will now quickly become my Head Start go-to.
Anytime, John.
Nicole Taxel-Tarides here, the new Director of Early Learning Programs for the Connecticut Institute for Communities, wrapping things up for this morning. But I have a feeling we'll be talking to Nicole, as well as our other guest, Jim Maloney, again soon about all the things that are happening that are so incredible with the Connecticut Institute for Communities, and learning more about how they're serving a larger geographic and population area here in Western Connecticut. So, Nicole, great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
So I love making new friends, especially when they're friends of good friends, and that is the situation with my guest this morning. I'm just meeting Dr. Dana Wade on the line for the first time, but he and I have mutual friends that go way back, and when those friends tell me about a good thing, then we bring it to you on the award-winning For the People. Dr. Wade has founded a nonprofit called Monitor My Health. You can find them at monitormyhealth.org, and they've got a mission to help prevent or delay type 2 diabetes and heart disease through screening and early lifestyle change intervention. And we all know how noble the cause is when somebody tries to change one's lifestyle to improve their health. And we also probably all know the feeling of dismal failure when we try to change those lifestyles, because those changes tend to come at you either in ways that are so labor intensive or so heavy or so drastic
that you don't want to do it, or they are just they just don't fit. So Dr. Wade has devised a series of lifestyle change programs that he is going to be presenting throughout Fairfield and New Haven counties through the nonprofit. And all of it is to help prevent diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and high blood pressure. Certainly four of the five or six big killers of people, and certainly ones that affect a lot of people's health, not just here in Connecticut, Dr. Wade, but across the country. So, Dr. Wade, first of all, great to meet you. Tell us a little bit about how you put this nonprofit together.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about this non-for-profit. So Monitor My Health was created out of my experience as a researcher at Albert Einstein School of Medicine. When I was doing, after my medical school, I have a postgrad position where I was researching the risk factor for heart disease and diabetes. And it was very obvious back then and still now that we came a long way to provide our patients who are already diagnosed with heart disease and diabetes with very effective medication. But however, we have not seen the outcome that we were expecting in terms of changing the disease course. And so I realized that, you know, there are things that can be done to prevent it. So if we cannot completely eliminate the disease, then we ought to do something about prevention. And that's how I started thinking how to bring the prevention. We have research about prevention, but the problem is that the general population was not aware of what to do to prevent it. And because the only medical access were the primary care, and primary care doctors do not have time to go through the preventative care, because most of them are not reimbursed for that. So there's a time challenge to address the preventative care in the primary care office. So therefore, most patients have never benefited from this research-based prevention care. And that was conducted by the National Institute of Health and the CDC, co-sponsored by the CDC. And this research have shown that those who enroll in a structured lifestyle change program decrease their risk for type 2 diabetes and heart disease by up to 71%. And that's huge. And that's in comparison with metformin, which is a medication that is used to help folks at the initial stage of the disease to prevent the progression of the disease. Metformin only reduced by 31%. Were all compared to control group, where lifestyle change actually reduced by up to 71%, and I thought that would be very helpful to bring this program to the population.
Well, there are a couple of things that are really, really cool about this project, Dr. Wade, that I found in the research that you provided me. First of all, you're one of the only organizations in Connecticut to receive CDC full recognition. In 2019, just last year, you received your second federal scholarship. You're offering these 15 lifestyle change programs at significantly reduced cost to Bridgeport, New Haven, and West Haven people and folks in the region. You had already over 200 participants at high risk for diabetes and heart disease complete the program and lowered their risk. But the big and important news is the program is free of charge for anyone 60 years of age or older who is pre-diabetic and participates in Medicare Part B. Now, I have to imagine you had to jump through a lot of hoops and do a lot of paperwork work to get all of the recognition and the scholarship and the CDC blessing. But please explain to people how they could take advantage of these programs, if especially if they're Medicare Part B participants.
Yes, I'll be happy to do so. So we got the full recognition from the CDC, and the full recognition, it's an award that is given to programs that are approved by the CDC to be a diabetes prevention program like us, a program that has provided the program for at least 1 year in the community and have provided and I have had good results, meaning that the participants have lost at least 5% of their initial weight. They have successfully reduced their risk factor for heart disease, like cholesterol and A1C, which is the average blood sugar for the past 3 months. So the program not only have to be delivered for 1 year, but also have to provide good results that meet the CDC standard. So we have done that. We started in 2018, and in 2019, we have provided the CDC with the data that we analyzed, and we were awarded this program. And that is a sign that we are trustworthy and we are effective in maintaining people in the program, in motivating them, and helping them with a little step by step, helping them change their lifestyle and to reduce their risk for heart disease and diabetes. So the good news is that with this full recognition, we are able to, we apply and we were qualified and to accept Medicare, and we apply for Medicare, and we are the only Medicare provider in Connecticut to provide a diabetes prevention program. And I think this is a big help for all the seniors, because as we get older, the risk factor, the risk for type 2 diabetes increase. Actually, according to the CDC, 25% of seniors, of citizens, of U.S. citizens above 60 years old are pre-diabetic. 25%, that's a lot of people. And overall, the population, there are 88 million American adults, that's one in three American, that have pre-diabetes. And so there are a lot of people out there with pre-diabetes that do not know they have it because there's no symptom. So this program comes very timely, because all the seniors now can benefit from this program free of charge.
Great. In the last couple minutes that we have with you, Dr. Wade, I really want to also make sure people understand this is not restricted to seniors or people on Medicare Part B. Anybody, and you and I both know, diabetes and pre-diabetes definitely doesn't start at the age where you qualify for Medicare. A lot of young people, a lot of middle-aged people have pre-diabetes conditions. How do they participate in the program? We've got about a minute.
Yes. So thank you very much. So everyone can participate. Everyone at increased risk. We do accept private insurance. Some private insurance like Husky, even Blue Cross and Anthem can pay for the program. If the participant, each participant have to check with their provider. However, we are working towards establishing the same partnership with those private insurance. But so far, I believe that some private insurance do cover it. Also, employee wellness. We offer this program to businesses because, according to the CDC, again, the diabetes costs to businesses $327 billion in loss of productivity every year.
Sure.
that's a lot of money that can be saved, and these are preventable.
Very, very important point. Folks, we're going to be visiting with Dr. Dana Wade again for a more extended period of time. But for now, if anything that you've heard is of interest to you, I would encourage you to go to monitormyhealth.org and find out about the ability to participate in one of these lifestyle change programs here in Southern Connecticut. Monitor My Health and Dr. Dana Wade uses certified coaches and evidence-based curriculum and a collaborative team approach to educate participants about healthy lifestyle choices. Their research-based methods have helped hundreds of people forestall the onset of type 2 diabetes and avoid risk factors for diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. Dr. Wade, great to meet you, and we're going to be talking to you again soon to hear more about the success of this program. But in the meantime, we hope you sprung forward this Sunday morning and that you're going to enjoy daylight savings time, and we'll talk to you again soon. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.